Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Miss Amy. How is your morning today? A little chilly here in Atlanta.
You know, it's chilly. However, I'm happy I'm not up north. Talked to my girlfriend in Chicago last night, and she was getting the milk and stocking up because they thought they might get snowed in.
Oh, well, that's always fun, huh? Yeah,
glad to be in the south. It's chilly, but only for a little while. And you know, if you're chilly in Atlanta, you know that it's only a couple months before it's going to get nice. And when it's nice out, there's one place in Atlanta I absolutely love to visit, the Atlanta Botanical Gardens. And Lee, when's the last time you went to the Botanical Gardens?
I think over Halloween. They do some Halloween thing,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, Halloween's always great. Father's Day is always great. Mother's Day. I just love to go to the Atlanta Botanical Gardens. Wonderful way to support the community. And what an incredible asset to the Atlanta community. We're fortunate this morning to have with us Dante Finolio and Jenny Cruz Sanders from the Atlanta Botanical Gardens here to talk to us a little bit about the conservation program. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Thank you.
So we are dying to know about your conservation programs and what you've got going on at the Atlanta Botanical Gardens. So let us know. Tell us all about it.
Sure. Well, we're here. Dante and I are here, and we're representing the conservation department at the Atlanta Botanical Garden. And the garden has been doing conservation almost since the beginning. And in the last few years, they've been building that program and to the point where we now have a conservation department that focuses on conserving endangered species, rare species of plants and amphibians. And that may sound kind of strange to have frogs in a conservation department at a garden, but it's an important part of what we do. And for two reasons. The first reason is because frogs help people connect to the environment. It helps people connect to the habitats that they see in the tropical conservatory. Mm-hmm. But for me, since I've been at the garden, I also find that frogs help to inform what we're doing with plants, and we can talk about that a little bit, how that works.
Can you, before we get really too far into this, can you really define what conservation means?
Sure. Well, conservation is, as a science, is a study of how to protect species that are going extinct or becoming rare as a result of several factors. And one of the primary reasons that species are endangered is as a result of habitat loss or habitat conversion. So we take natural habitats and we change them either for agriculture, for building cities, resource use, water, soil conservation. And then species are also threatened with introduced species that are not naturally occurring in a particular area that can outcompete native species. And what we're seeing actually is an increasing importance of diseases that are affecting species too. So you might set aside a natural area or a park to protect a plant or a frog or another type of species, and that will, thinking that that will keep it there for a really long time, but diseases don't stop at park boundaries. And that's one of the things we're learning a lot about as we look at frogs at the garden and trying to understand how that affects species.
How many different types of frogs do you have at the gardens currently?
We have about 30 species of frogs at the garden.
They're beautiful, too, by the way. I love looking at the frogs.
Unbelievably beautiful. And that's one of the things. Some of the most beautiful ones are the poison dart frogs. Mm-hmm. They're very showy, and that's because they have warning coloration. They're not afraid to be out where people will see them. When frogs, other frogs that have more coloration that makes them blend into the background, into the leaves, those frogs aren't poisoned, so they're hiding when you see that kind of coloration.
So the more colorful ones are more dangerous, generally.
If you were going to eat them.
Ooh, wouldn't want to eat them. So what are you doing as far as breeding of the frogs?
We have a number of programs going on. We have a collection of endangered species from Panama. And Panama is one of the areas in the tropics that has been hard hit by this fungal pathogen that's wiping out amphibian populations around the world. It's called chytrid fungus. And in about 2005, before this chytrid fungus reached a site that had dozens of amphibian species in Panama, there was a collection made in an attempt to try to safeguard small populations of these species away from the area that, that would be hit by chytrid fungus. And sure enough, chytrid did arrive, and many, many of those species have disappeared from this area. So we have this group of frogs in a special laboratory that is a repurposed shipping container that's insulated and environmentally controlled inside. And these frogs inside of the pod are bred through a variety of methods, ranging from things called using rain chambers to just temperature manipulation. And we will go through the process, produce the frogs, and all of the animals that are here in the United States will not go back to the wild. What we do with these, once we produce them, we will ship them off to other institutions for educational exhibits and conservation messages. It's really important to recognize that moving frogs around the world and breeding them with intent to put them back into the wild could potentially open up a can of worms in terms of them picking up a disease where they were bred and then going back. We work with a sister institution and project in Panama that's working with the same species. So we work collaboratively. We try to figure out how to breed these species, many of which have never been kept or bred in captivity before. And through that collaboration, once they're bred down in Panama, those individuals that are produced down there theoretically could be released by the Panamanian government if they deem that appropriate.
Now, ultimately, the ones that are bred here, will they go back to Panama?
They will not. The animals that are in the United States now will remain in institutions, probably in the United States, mm-hmm. Europe, and maybe Asia.
Okay. Can you talk about the pod a little bit? Because that's kind of an interesting story, isn't it? How you guys came about that?
Well, the pod is an interesting story. It's something we have at the garden to house frogs, but it's also an experiment to learn about the technology of the pod. The mm-hmm. pod is a repurposed refrigeration cargo shipping container, the kind you see on the back of a truck or mm-hmm. on a big ship that gets sent around the world. And here in Atlanta, Container Tech repurposed the pod for us, the shipping container. They put windows in it. They put an HVAC in it. It's about 40 feet long. There are two rooms in it. One room is 10 feet by 10 feet. The other room is 30 feet by 10 feet. And one room serves as a clean room. It has a sink, and that's a place where the amphibian specialists and the scientists enter the pod. We have two doors on it. And so picture this container that's now has doors and windows, sinks inside, and the larger room is full of tanks. And it has mist systems and lights and separate tanks for the different species of amphibians that are in there. So we're creating, it's very humid in there right now. The windows are all fogged up because it's very tropical in the pod. And what's neat, too, is we're learning about how to best get electricity to the different parts of the pod and then also plumb it well. And so we maintain records on how much water we're using. For example, we recapture all of the water in water tubes
Wow.
that were designed by advanced coastal technologies, especially for the pod. And we can then reuse that water that comes out of the pod for other things in the garden, for washing vehicles or some of the Cushmans we have, or washing tools or watering plants. So we're trying to stay green all the way around. And what we're learning about the pod, the real intent is to learn how to do a pod, how to make a pod, a laboratory for holding frogs, breeding them, learning about them. And then this is information and that we can take to other countries where there are frogs mm-hmm. that are threatened, set up a laboratory for frogs species in the native countries where they are found so that programs can be created for captive breeding of frogs, and the frogs don't need to be moved. They can be captively bred and re-released in their own country.
Now, can the public go into the pod, or this is just where you do your stuff and then you get them to a certain stage and then you bring them out to the public?
Well, this is an important point about the conservation program. The pod is closed to the public, and that's because we don't want to introduce disease into mm-hmm. the pod. So these mm-hmm. are very rare frogs. We want to keep them safe. You can look into the pod, and right now with the one entrance that we're using at the garden, you can see it very clearly. You can look into the pod and see the frogs in there, but we don't let the public in there, only on special occasions. But the purpose of the conservation program, we want to teach people about conservation. We have a lot of visitors to the garden. We have a lot of visitors to our website. So we can reach the public with a message about people and plants, people and frogs, conservation. We also train people at the garden in conservation. So we're looking to build our programs for having students come and learn about conservation at the garden. We have visitors from other countries who come and train at the garden in techniques for plant conservation and amphibian conservation. And those visitors do go into the pod and learn about what we do in the pod. And then we also advance the science of conservation through our own research. So those are the three purposes.
So it sounds like you're really creating an ideal environment for the frogs at the Atlanta Botanical Gardens. Do you share resources with any other universities or research facilities throughout the country?
We have partnerships with other research and conservation institutions through our programs at the garden. We partner with Atlanta area groups, including the zoo and the aquarium and Fern Bank, with universities, especially the University of Georgia, Georgia Tech, Georgia State, and also with resource managers like the Nature Conservancy, Georgia Department of Natural Resources, U.S. Fish and Wildlife. All of those are important partners for taking on the many aspects of conservation.
So some of our listeners are probably thinking, why should I care about the amphibians and why should I really care about conservation? Let us know, Dante.
That's a great question. I can remember going through graduate school and asking my classes how many of my students had heard of the amphibian crisis. And almost without question, I would not have anybody raise their hands. And it's a huge problem that we're facing right now. Over 6,000 species of amphibians have been described, and at least a third of them are in very, very serious trouble. But then there's this whole other third that we list as data deficient. And data deficient means we just don't know what those populations were like prior to habitat alteration or disease. And in all truth, in the next 20, 30 years, we could lose upwards of 50% of that 6,000 species of frog and so or amphibians in general. And I like to make this point. There are a lot of natural reasons why we should care that a huge group of vertebrates are disappearing from the face of the earth. But for those non-conservationists out there, my message would be this. Take this into consideration. Humanity is sitting at the edge of a giant battle, and one that we really haven't had to fight since the origins of antibiotics. We are down to one single antibiotic that effectively fights antibiotic-resistant staph, and staph is staphylococcus. It gives you the staph infection, and that's vancomycin. And once vancomycin-resistant strains arise in staph, we're in a lot of trouble. We stopped developing antibiotics years ago, and now all of these microbes have crept back in, and they are antibiotic-resistant. Once that happens, once we have staphylococcus strains that are resistant to all of these antibiotics, people could go relatively healthy into the hospital and die. It's a huge problem, and billions of dollars are spent with people in the hospital with these resistant staph infections. So it turns out the reason amphibians were able to evolve, they've got this permeable skin. And permeable means that gas and water can freely cross that skin. But a moist barrier like that, moist skin, is a perfect ideal place for bacteria and fungi to develop. And in the evolutionary process that amphibians pass through, they evolve these special glands in their skin that are called granular glands. Well, those granular glands are filled with toxins. And these glands secrete these toxins onto this moist skin, and they keep it microbe-free. They kill the bacteria and they kill the fungi. Well, Western science got to looking at these toxins, they realized this is a pharmaceutical storehouse. There are all kinds of potential applications for these skin secretions, and we have identified several species of frog that produce skin toxins that very effectively kill these antibiotic-resistant bacteria. So just consider this. There are now frogs that we've identified that produce skin toxins that functionally destroy the HIV virus. We know that there are frog skin toxins that are stronger than any of our current painkillers, and we know that there are frogs that produce these skin toxins that will kill all of these antibiotic-resistant bacteria that we're facing. And a lot of these frogs that do this are sitting at the edge of extinction. And Jenny had brought up earlier, one of the problems that's driving amphibians towards extinction is habitat alteration. First and foremost, habitat alteration affects amphibians greater than any other single force. The second force that's driving amphibian extinctions would be emergent infectious disease. And then there are other things. There are introduced species. There are environmental contaminants, whether you're talking about airborne contaminants or water contaminants. There are a lot of problems, but a lot of the things that are driving amphibian declines are human-caused. And my big argument to folks, if you don't care about amphibians, that's fine, but you should care about yourself, because at some point in the future, all of us are going to have to make trips to the hospital. With that in mind, we are losing an entire pharmaceutical storehouse. It's going extinct in front of our eyes because we won't stop and think about the long-term ramifications of what we do when we pollute the environment, when we cut down the forests and things like that. It's easy to get on that soapbox, but if you think about what we're doing in the long term, we could really lose our best chances at fighting some of the diseases that we face.
Wow, Dante, now did you see the light bulb go off when you were talking? So a lot of our listeners, now it's become more clear why they really should care about the amphibians. What can they do? What can our listeners do? How can we get engaged as the general public? Obviously, we're not going to be in the pod doing research, but what can I do to help?
Well, we get that question a lot, and my first answer is support amphibian conservation. There are all kinds of organizations that are involved. The Atlanta Botanical Garden is not the only organization with a variety of projects in hand, but if you Google amphibian conservation, you'll find very quickly that there are a wide variety of projects and programs. Support them financially. That is first and foremost what is needed. There are all kinds of other suggestions and other ways to get involved. You can work to clean up a local habitat. You can get involved with identifying populations of amphibians in your area and help monitor them, et cetera, et cetera. But really, the thing that's needed most right now is financial support, particularly in this financial environment.
Any final thoughts, Lee? We're running out of time.
Is there, like, from an outreach standpoint, are you can you share a little bit about that, like how within the gardens, how people can get involved?
Sure. Well, one of the ways that people can get involved is by visiting the garden and becoming members of the garden. And there are opportunities for volunteering in a number of different departments at the garden. The garden is involved in outreach, too, through partnerships, as we mentioned, with universities, resource managers, even Georgia Power, in terms of the partners who work with us on conservation. Visit our website and find out more about what we're doing, and you can find out about how to support our conservation programs at our website. And in the future, look for opportunities for students to volunteer and learn through our training programs in the conservation department at the garden.
So there's opportunities for corporations that maybe need help, like going green. You consult with them a little bit?
Sure. One of our biggest roles and most important roles is through consulting with anyone who wants to know more about conservation, mm-hmm. about how to either conserve habitat, manage plants or amphibians on their program, or just with some ideas. So we can partner with corporations as well.
Wonderful. Y'all, how can people best reach you to find out more about your projects?
Is there a website?
Yes. The website is www.atlantabotanicalgarden.org.
And that's garden, not gardens.
Garden.
Right.
Terrific. Well, listeners, if you're looking for a great place to look at plants, you want education on conservation, or to learn more about the research, or just for pure enjoyment, please visit the Atlanta Botanical Gardens. And Dante and Jenny, thank you so much for being with us today. We hope people will reach out and find out more about your amphibian project.
Thank you so much.
Great to be here.
And for now, I'm Amy Otto with the Atlanta Business Radio Show. Lee, have a great day.
All right. See you later.